What is up, X-Men fans, and welcome to another episode of Uncanny, the unofficial X-Men 97 podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Condon, and today we are going to go over episode 2 of the initial 2-episode release that occurred on March 20th. So, very, very exciting. We are going to be going over everything about episode 2. I will go into some spoilers and perhaps some speculation as someone who is a longtime X-Men fan, someone who has read the comics extensively, grew up with the cartoon series. I'm 38. I was born in 1986. X-Men were kind of a part of my upbringing. The show had a lot to do with how connected I have always been to the property. And again, as I said in our first episode review, as someone who works in nonprofit media and advocacy for people who are marginalized and impacted by policy affecting marginalized communities, the allegory of mutant and X-Men, very, very dear and near to my heart. So let's go in, episode 2. So we see in this episode, right, the X-Men, most notably Scott Summers, aka Cyclops, struggling with the notion that Magneto is now in possession of Xavier's dream. So, spoiler alert, revealed in last episode, the last will and testament of Charles Francis Xavier is to give all of everything to the arch nemesis of the X-Men, Magneto, or Eric Lenscher. So this is a huge development. And yes, this is in line with what occurs in the comics. When Xavier, in the comics, leaves the Earth to have a love connection with Lilandra from the Shi'ar. We won't go into that. It's a lot of space opera, but just suffice to say, Magneto taking the reins as the leader of the X-Men is based in canon comic. So we see other characters in the first part of episode 2, most notably the Morlocks, who Magneto frees from an attack from the Friends of Humanity in the sewers of Manhattan. So we see a couple characters, namely Callisto, the leader of the Morlocks, Leech, Mask, and some others. And Magneto saves these characters from an attack by Friends of Humanity. So, is he turning a new leaf? Is Magneto going to be a good guy now? God knows. But, you know, the show is definitely trying to have us stretch that possibility. And the rest of the X-Men are questioning the same thing. How can this guy, who has been for decades a terrorist, be now running what is a philanthropic and altruistic organization, the X-Men? It's a tough call, and they're all kind of fighting with it. And obviously Scott, who has the longest running connection to Magneto in a very antithetical connection, has the hardest time believing this. Right, so just for some backstory, Scott Summers and Jean and Hank were a part of the first cadre of X-Men. So when the X-Men were founded by Charles Xavier, Scott was Xavier's first student. So Cyclops was the first student of Charles Xavier, followed swiftly thereafter by Hank McCoy, or Beast, and then Robert Drake as Iceman, who we haven't seen yet in the show, and Warren Worthington III, who we've only seen a glimpse at in the first episode when Morph transitions into that guy with the wings. Yeah, that was Angel. He was part of the first X-Men team. And then Jean Grey. So Jean, who we see as pregnant, and Scott were a part of the first X-Men class. And Magneto was their first arch-villain. So the rest of the X-Men maybe can, you know, feel a little bit more in the gray area about this Magneto guy, but Scott and Jean and Beast are, you know, definitely not someone who's just going to take this without some questions. You know, it's hard to believe that someone who's been trying to kill you for near decades is just going to show up and, you know, be all kumbaya. You know, it's not something that Scott or Gene or Hank are really easily going to stomach without some serious, you know, proof. And, you know, we see this come up as a talking point with Ororo, who, you know, unlike Gambit, and to an extent Rogue, was, you know, has been with the X-Men for a while, but was definitely not in the first class of X-Men. So Rogue and Wolverine joined the X-Men at about the same time. It was technically the second class or the second genesis of the X-Men. So that was Storm from Africa, Wolverine from Canada, Nightcrawler or Kurt Wagner from Germany, Colossus or Pyotr Rasputin from Russia or the USSR. You know, we had another character from Japan, Sunfire, and so on. And then a character from the Republic of Ireland, Banshee. You know, we don't see them yet in the show. They may show up later, but for all extensive purposes right now, Ororo and Wolverine represent this second generation of X-Men with, you know, Gambit and Rogue and to an extent Jubilee being like a third or fourth iteration. So Ororo and Jean have kind of the most, I'd say, antithetical relationship with Magneto. So they kind of need more of that trust relationship to be built back. Because as Ororo kind of says in the kind of main control room in the Xavier Mansion, you kind of got to prove to us that you're not really, you know, lying to us or going to kill us. So that's kind of a big deal. So then we see a scene where Jean and Ororo are kind of hashing out this concern that Jean has of as a mother giving birth to a mutant child. And I think something that's notable in this scene is that Jean, a white woman, is talking to Ororo, a black woman, about concerns of bringing life into the world, life that people may hate or fear. I'm fairly certain that the showrunners were cognizant of that optical, meaning. Well, we have a white woman crying about bringing life into the world. Meanwhile, a black woman is having to comfort this white woman and saying, well, you know, hey, I found family here. I found meaning with the X-Men being different and being born different. I've never known anything but being a mutant, right? Again, mutant is an allegory for other. So, you know, in American history, the black community has always been seen as the other by, you know, predominantly white people. So again, a lot of these scenes have a deeper meaning. You know, it's, again, X-Men was founded in the civil rights movement. For many of you that may not know this, and I think this is important to provide context to what we're watching, Magneto is the embodiment of a civil rights movement that uses violence. So, Malcolm X, right? Malcolm X informed the development of Magneto. But unlike Malcolm X, Magneto is Jewish. Eric is Jewish. He was a victim of the Holocaust. So his motivations, and this comes up later in episode 2, are justice for him, his people, his heritage, and then his species, in this case, mutant, against the oppressors, right? Malcolm X was more about justice for marginalized communities against their oppressors in the 1960s and prior, that was white Americans, right? And Xavier is a metaphorical allegory for the way that Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. tried to achieve coexistence, which was through dialogue, which was through nonviolent social action, right? No, so that's the dichotomy between the X-Men and the Brotherhood of Mutants. The Brotherhood of Mutants was Magneto's answer to societal issues and the way that mutants were treated, and the X-Men were Xavier's answer to the way mutants were treated, which was more about coexistence and aid, not as much about hostility. So, you know, when the UN comes and you know, Senator Cooper comes with the planes and they're like, you know, hey, you're being arrested, that is founded in a real place. Magneto was a terrorist. He engaged in terrorist activity domestically and internationally, right? And so him being arrested makes a lot of sense. We may not have seen in the show, in these two episodes, what he's done, but just to give a little bit of a background, I mean, the guy basically in his first encounter with the young X-Men, you know, Jean, Cyclops, Beast, so on, he was trying to steal nuclear warheads from Cape Canaveral, Florida, right? He was literally trying to steal nuclear bombs to use as kind of collateral for his political and social aims, which is to bring awareness to mutant suffering. So Magneto is definitely not a victim in this situation. He has done things in his own past, and he acknowledges it in the show, that warrant arrest and a trial. He was tried in the comics as well, right? Magneto was tried. In the comics, he was tried in France, and in this, he's tried, I think, in New York, I guess, where they're saying that the UN is headquartered in the show in New York, not, you know, in Geneva. So, you know, we see this trial, the trial of Magneto, and kind of that goes into this whole thing. And again, this is based in the comics, right? Magneto was tried in the comics. Magneto was also acquitted in the comics because of a similar situation, right? He saves the judges. He saves the people in the courtroom in the area from an attack by these anti-mutant zealots, right? And let's not forget about what, you know, may or may not have recently occurred in the United States and around the world, where you have armed insurrection against existing political and social structures, right? By mobs, right? What are we seeing in the show? The Friends of Humanity, essentially neo-Nazis, predominantly white, predominantly male, going and attacking government establishments because of a political purpose. This is, you know, this show, even though this show is a continuation of a show that was started in the 90s, you know, X-Men 97, we're still dealing with all this stuff today, right? And Magneto is forced to give a speech to defend himself, and he's basically just saying, everything I've done, even if it was bad, was to raise awareness and to pursue justice against the targeting of my people. And for Magneto, in this show, and I'm just assuming because we've dropped the Genosha bomb, it's not foreshadowing. Genosha, for those of you that may not know, in the X-Men universe was an island that mutants started to settle and populate that Magneto had a big hand in orchestrating, right? An island nation, you know, far away from other people. Think like Fiji, right? Literally in the middle of nowhere. Not that Fiji's in the middle of nowhere, it's just it's in the middle of an ocean. So Genosha is an island in the middle of the ocean, right? Self-sustaining, it's got its own water supply, fresh water, it's got enough land to grow crops, and people can kind of live there and really do their own thing. And Magneto, his political agency is to create a society that is then seen by the world community as credible, right? Just like other countries currently in 2024 are looking for acknowledgement into the United Nations, right? Or into NATO. You know, this again, NATO. You know, we have countries trying to get into NATO so that there's protection, right? If Genosha, which is a mutant population in this, you know, comic book universe and in the show, is recognized by the UN, then they're protected. Right? Then some private entity can't send weapons and target it and not face retribution from other world powers. So it's a big deal for Genosha to be independent, to have its own agency, to be its own sovereign country, but also have the backing of other nations in the time. So in my interpretation of this, Magneto has an agenda. And I believe it's tied to this idea of Genosha, which if you know the comics, this is going to get tough. We think what we've seen so far is tough. It's going to get a lot worse, folks. Get ready. This is why I love X-Men. So next up, Jean is going into labor. And who is there to drive her to the hospital? None other than Logan. The guy who loves her will never be able to realize that love because she loves someone else. Has anyone else ever been in that situation? I know I have. It's great. Great. Anyways, we all have been in Logan's shoes. And in this instance, let's hope you've not been in these shoes, because that's got to be an emotional roller coaster right there. Driving the woman you love to the hospital while the man that she's, you know, I'm not sure if they're married at this point, but definitely having a baby with, is doing something else. Right? You know, doing his job, saving, you know, people, but, you know, he doesn't stay with his girlfriend or wife. He goes off and is, you know, the super cop, you know, the Boy Scout. I love Cyclops. He's one of my favorite characters. But you're right, he's kind of, you know, very much a straight shooter, so to speak. He doesn't really have the kind of, you know, repertoire that Logan has of being, you know, nonchalant and very personable. Or Gambit. You know, Scott is very much... He has to be in control because, you know, he could basically just vaporize anyone he looks at. And so, you know, they go to the hospital and then we see, oh boy, it's some racist white guy now in impenetrable armor. Think like Iron Man, if Iron Man was a racist zealot. That's who this executioner is. And he's fighting and he's actually doing pretty good. You know, it's kind of scary, you know, and we're all worried. Oh, man, is our X-Men peoples going to really survive? And, you know, fighting ensues. The choreography is great. You know, we see Jean and Wolverine get to the hospital. And then this is a great scene. And, you know, the hospital, right, is not going to deliver Jean's baby. And this came up in the comics a lot, right? Because in the comic universe, you know, people were not comfortable with mutants, right? There was a stigma that mutants were dangerous, which is kind of warranted. You know, what if the child is born and has like a supernova ability and just nukes everyone? You know, they don't want to be held liable for that kind of thing. You know, and this has happened in the comics a number of times where someone goes to the hospital and they're, you know, they got a gunshot wound, you know, they have a limb torn off and the hospital doesn't want to see them. You know, this has also happened in American history, you know, before the Civil Rights Movement, where black and brown Americans would be brought to a hospital, and if it was segregated, sorry, you're not going to be seen. This is a real thing, and it could occur again if certain, you know, people come to power and start passing laws that do that again. You know, American and world history is measured in decades, not in years, you know, and I think this kind of scary rhetoric of you will not be seen here, you will not be treated here, that is a very real historic thing that this show is using this superhero allegory to talk about. So, you know, Rogue in her OG way just goes up to the doctor and is like, sorry, sugar, bam, and just takes all his memory. Now she knows how to deliver a baby. Pretty cool, right? Well, it's very convenient for her. Unfortunately, for, you know, people in American history in the past, you can't just absorb someone's ability and you know, suture that wound or deliver that baby. So oftentimes, in that situation, people just had to fend for themselves. But I digress. So we continue and we see, you know, Magneto and Storm having to contend with this dangerous assault in this federal building. Again, if you live in the United States, this may look similar to you. We had an insurrection. We had an armed insurrection into our nation's capital to stop the vote. You know, again, this stuff, and again, this happened in the comics, right? What we see, people taking weapons into the UN to try and disrupt Magneto's trial. Again, you know, these aren't things born just out of the air. This is from canon, from Canon Comics back in the 90s, right? And all this stuff is happening now around the world. And then, as you see, and this is huge, big moment in the comics. The Executioner targets Magneto, but Storm jumps in front of the blast, thinking it fatal, and she is nerfed. Her powers are obliterated. She is rendered Homo sapien, not Homo sapien sapien. So horrible. She's basically, yeah, she's turned into a human. The one thing that she always thought was a dream that she never wanted. And suddenly, now, she can no longer feel the air, feel the moisture, control the wind, ride the wind. She is now powerless. Horrible. Just shocking. And in the comics, people were shocked when this occurred. In the comics, she created that mohawk, that iconic mohawk that we see, in grief out of losing her powers. I was hoping they'd go there in the show, like have her actually have just her long flowing hair, have this occur, and then have her shave the sides of her head. That's what happened in the comics. And then Magneto just like is obviously racked with emotion because of this. So we see him cry when he lifts the council members and the judges out of this area, just jettisons them off into space, and basically is just like, I could kill you all in a blink of a thought, but I'm not. I'm trying to be better. Like, it's powerful. But he's crying. Just imagine how it must feel. It's like taking away someone. Like, what if you had a gun to shoot away someone's sexuality? Like, someone, you know, just shot me, and suddenly I'm not pansexual. I'm straight. Or suddenly I'm not bisexual. I'm just gay. Like, how, you know, suddenly I'm not, you know, my ethnicity. I'm something else. Imagine what that must be like, right? You know, so the topics being brought about in the show, these topics were brought about in the comics. That's why so many of us loved X-Men, thought that Marvel, their best property was X-Men. You know, which again, very happy that they're going there, but it is a very, very difficult subject matter, and it is something that is challenging, right? So I'm really excited to see what happens in episode 3 and 4. I'm not sure if they're going to release them one by one or in twos, but I'm very excited. So, you know, again, we see Magneto going through this existential exercise and deciding not to kill all these people and just saying, you know, I could, it would be easy, but I want to be better. Jean gives birth, the baby's born, it's a male. She knew it was male because she's psychic. She could actually connect, have a connection with the infant son in vitro. And they call the child Nathan. Nathan Charles Summers. Unlike the character in the comics, Nathan Christopher Summers, the character is called Nathan Charles Summers. That's a big departure from in the comics, this character, who, spoiler alert, don't listen, keep turning this off if you want no spoilers. Okay, is Cable, right? Nathan Summers is Cable. So Cable is a character in the comics. Everyone is very fond of Cable. He kind of has the powers of his mother, Jean Grey, but due to a techno-organic virus that he receives because of a battle with a superhero when he's an infant, is sent off into the future because that's the only time period where there's a cure to halt this virus that essentially turns flesh into metal. So that was, you know, a little Easter egg there. So Nathan Summers, that is a huge character in the comics, Cable. But Nathan Summers in the comics was born to Scott's relationship with Madeline Pryor. So Madeline Pryor, or the Goblin Queen, is a character that has a deep connection to Mr. Sinister. So again, Mr. Sinister, Nathaniel Essex, is a character that you may not have seen before if you haven't watched the original 90s show or read the comics. He's a geneticist, kind of from the Victorian era in England, from Essex. And his obsession is like essentially altering genes to create like the super person. And he tinkers around a lot with pairing people up kind of to basically have sex and have an offspring that is, you know, genetically in line with some outcome. And Mr. Sinister in the comics created a clone of Jean Grey, and had this clone meet up with Scott after Scott and Jean kind of were separated. And they had a kid, and that kid was named Nathan. Nathan Christopher Summers. So this is new territory, right? I don't know if the Jean that we see and that we've seen in this show so far is Jean, or is it Madeline Pryor? I don't know. And was there any point that we haven't seen in the show where they two have switched? If this is in continuity with the series, we were not introduced to Maddie or Madeline. So one would assume it is Jean. And the woman that shows up on the doorstep saying, "I need the X-Men," is that Madeline Pryor? Or is that Jean? I do not know. But they are, one of them's got to be Maddie, and one of them's got to be Jean. And then another thing before we end, you know, today's podcast, because we're kind of running a little bit out of time, we see Rogue and Eric or Magneto. Yeah, they're getting it on. So what we don't see on camera and what we allude to off camera by Remy or Gambit's reaction is, yes, Rogue and Eric have a sexual history. And one of the reasons that is the case is that Magneto can create force fields that separate him physically from other things using magnetism. So, right, he can touch Rogue, you know, through this force field, and she can touch him through this force field and not absorb his powers or memories. So, from what I understand in the comics, Eric was her first sexual encounter when she was a young adult, or really a teen. Because Rogue ran with the Brotherhood of Mutants. He was the leader of the Brotherhood of Mutants. Rogue was one of the Brotherhood's first acolytes, right? Rogue in the comics was the adoptive daughter of Mystique and Mystique's wife, Destiny, right? Rogue was raised by these two people who were active members of this Brotherhood of Mutants with Magneto for decades. So Rogue would have a very intrinsic relationship with Eric, whether it's more of like a foster uncle or whether it's sexual. They definitely have chemistry. And, you know, what does that mean for the show? What does that mean for, you know, Gambit? I have no idea. But there's a lot going on. There's a lot to unpack in this series. And I think they're doing a great job of carrying forward the emotional tonality that people loved from the original X-Men series, right? A lot of the OG X-Men animation and the comic centered around adult themes. And the reason that people are drawn to Marvel comics versus DC, I'm just going to say it, you can hate me if you want, Marvel comics oftentimes packages its superhero content within the realm of normal life. So it's not about sensationalizing normal life like DC, but it's about taking the sensational and grounding it in what we all experience. Right? We all have romantic trysts. I'm in a romantic tryst right now. I won't get into it. But, you know, we all deal with love and loss and, you know, racism and, you know, loneliness. And, you know, Marvel has always written their stuff and has developed story and narrative around these ideas. In the MCU to date, we haven't really seen it because we haven't gone into the properties that really bring it to surface, like the X-Men, like mutants, right? You know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe had mutants in it. We just couldn't call them mutants because of property disputes. Like Scarlet Witch. Yeah, she's a mutant. Quicksilver, her brother, mutant. Guess who's their dad? Magneto. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, this stuff, you know, it's foundational for Marvel. X-Men were foundational for Marvel. There are mutants and other team dynamics, including in the Avengers. Right? Beast was a part of the Avengers, but, you know, obviously they didn't have him in there yet because guess what? You know, there was a dispute, a IP dispute, but now that's over. That's why we have the show. So I love seeing what I've seen. You know, we see Aurora struggling with being human and having her identity erased without her consent, right? It's like these pray away the gay camps. Like, you know, it's going there. You know, no one should have their identity erased without their consent. or institutionalized to erase their identity without their consent, right? The fact that Storm was a mutant wasn't separate from who she was. It was a part of who she was. So we're really going to have to see where this show goes and how it deals with that loss, but I'm excited to see it. So till next time, enjoy and keep it classic.